Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Duce, the contradictions of power. 80 years after the fall of Benito Mussolini, controversy remains about what his dictatorship represents. This is reflected in a different size to the Duce's leadership. It is the subject of the first major study of Mussolini in English in 20 years. It's by Peter J. Williamson. Delighted to be joining me live on the line. Peter himself. Peter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Giles.
Good to have you with us. There is perhaps, you could argue, a tendency to look at Mussolini's leadership in Italy as almost a sort of side issue to what happens in Germany during the same period of time. But Mussolini took power much earlier than Hitler was to rise in Germany. And for those who write it off as fascism light or sort of watered down Nazism, the realities were somewhat different.
No, that's right. In fact, Hitler in the 1920s saw Mussolini very much as a beacon, as somebody who provided, if you like, a model for seizing and then using power. In the 1930s, the role was kind of reversed, as you were indicating. Hitler became the dominant partner in the alliance between Germany and Italy. And there's no doubt that the Nazi regime was far more violent, far more forceful, relied much more on terror than Mussolini's Italy. But nonetheless, there are clearly parallels between them. I think in particular, ending of elections, dominant single leader is the important political focus of the regime, and both ultimately very interested in expanding their empires, Nazi Germany in Eastern Europe in particular, Mussolini on a more minor scale, into Africa, but he had his eyes on Yugoslavia, indeed moving through Africa into Egypt. So they were both ambitious for international expansion.
And if you look at the reason and the reasons why both these dictators come to power, it's all to do with the Treaty of Versailles 1918, a sense of shame. And for the Germans, we know pretty much more about that because they're losing power. But for the Italians, it was a real slap in the face because they were on the winning side. They had beaten the Austro-Hungarian Empire. And so reparations for the Italians, I mean, they really felt hard done by.
That's absolutely right. In some ways, it's surprising. As you say, the Italians were on the winning side, although most of the war between 1915 and 1918, they struggled. But eventually, the Austrians, I think, began to become weakened. And Italy had hoped and had entered the war in alliance with Britain and France in the hope of getting extra territory. So there'd been a pact agreed in 1915 where if Italy was on the winning side, it would get various territories. Given that the Allies thought, and Woodrow Wilson in particular, thought that the Italian contribution to the war was not as great as it should have been, the settlement was less generous than the Italians expected. It wasn't bad. But within the country, they then began to develop this idea that there'd been a sort of what was called a mutilated victory, that they'd been pushed around a bit by other powers, mainly the US, but also Britain and France. And that created quite a widespread resentment, partly because in Italy, there had grown up a kind of nationalism which was unrealistic, shall we say. There was a belief that Italy was or should be stronger than it ever was, or perhaps in some ways ever could be.
And what we're also looking at the fact is that Italy, like Germany, was a new nation. It was a baby in terms. Germany in 1862, Italy Garibaldi, isn't it? Which is around about the same period of time, because before then, it's a series of city-states, basically, or areas. And so the idea of a united Italy is a very... You're talking about a country that's less than 100 years old, or just over 100 years old.
Yes, I mean, Italy had more or less been formed in the 1860s. It expanded a bit thereafter. And it had struggled to, in a sense, bring all the different component parts, all the city-states, as you mentioned, together into some sort of unified whole. Having said that, though, going into the 20th century, there were signs of progress in Italy. It was growing economically. Inequality was declining, etc. So it was beginning in the 20th century to move forward in much the same way as other countries had. It was following a sort of similar path of modernization. And in some ways, it is therefore odd that that path broke with the seizure of power by the fascists in 1922.
One of the things... Sorry,
John. And the other interesting thing was that that inability to unify the country, to pull it together, did affect Mussolini. He never quite successfully brought the country together in that sense. A variety of reasons. One, I think, was that loyalty to local areas, the city-states, remained strong among Italians. Second thing was the prevalence of Catholicism and the Catholic Church as a sort of rival to people's allegiances, if you like. And also that in some ways, parts of the country, particularly the South, were very underdeveloped. Not all Italians spoke Italian. They spoke a local dialect. So there was this counter flow against trying to create a unified country, which was very much what Mussolini was intent on doing.
When we talk about propaganda and fascism, you immediately think Goebbels, because obviously he's the meister of the propaganda meister. But importantly, Mussolini was a journalist before he were, you know, he was a journalist. That's how he understood. Before, you know, he was one of the first to understand the power of the media and also the power of invoking a glorious past that perhaps never really existed. In this case, the Roman Empire, hence the Abyssinian invasion, etc.
That's right. I mean, Mussolini was in some ways a very successful journalist. I think most people recognize he had qualities as a communicator. But, and I think this is an important part, a lot of that was aimed at having an impact, at presenting an image. He was very good at presenting an image. And in some ways, he was an ideal character for a regime that relied on propaganda. In the 1920s, a lot of that was aimed at controlling, suppressing information that came out. But in the 1930s, it began to create a more positive image of a greater Italy that went back indeed to Roman times. Although, interestingly, a lot of the propaganda that Mussolini and the fascists set up in the 1930s was based on Goebbels' model. Mm. And in fact, they spent a lot of time studying what Goebbels was doing.
Just going to say, but the other thing is, of course, the reason that Italy embraces the fascism is because, you know, it's the early 20s and, you know, Europe is swinging left and right and Bolshevism is the big bugbear that everybody's terrified of. So that's going to appeal to landed gentry, church and state, which is basically what you've got with the Italian situation, pretty much as you had with the Spanish situation.
Absolutely. After the First World War, there was a lot of social and economic disturbance. There was almost a breakdown in law and order. There was what's called the Biennio Rosso 2 years of red violence. And there was a lot of concern that Italy would be the next Russia, the next Bolshevik revolution. Somewhat ironically, by the time Mussolini became prime minister, that was falling away. It was almost a failed kind of revolution. And nonetheless, there was, I think, still a concern about the power of socialists and then indeed the communists, later Communist Party established in Italy. So fascism was a reaction to that. And I think very importantly, we talk about Mussolini a lot, but fascism also came from a sort of unusual phenomenon of squad violence. It started, landowners got together squads to break up strikes and occupation of land, which became effectively fascist squads. And that violence was pretty important in the rise of fascism, because what eventually happened was they got rid of, or pretty much got rid of, the opposition. So fascism was that reaction to left, and you can then see much of what happened once the fascists were in power was a reaction against the left. And yeah, there are parallels very much with Spain.
What was Mussolini's relationship like then? And what was it like to be an ordinary Italian living in Italy under Mussolini, say in the 30s? Because obviously we know Germany, there was the massive public works system, Speer, you know, with the Minister of Works and the Autobahns and these, you know, these huge projects. Yeah. Was Italy a much more fragmented, as you said, 40 different types of languages basically in the country? Do we see Autostrada, you know, coming in? Do we see those huge public works, or is it much more difficult for him to sort of corral in the way that the Nazis did?
There was, although there was a tradition in Italy of using public works, but in the 1930s, there were public works. Indeed, there were some in the 1920s. Mussolini probably had the first motorway in the world, which was a bit odd because actually there weren't that many cars. It was more a kind of showpiece rather than a practical solution. But yes, there were public works. Probably one of the most important was the attempt to drain swamp land to increase agricultural land. And that was, in fact, a very ambitious program. They hoped to reclaim about a third of the agricultural and forest area in the country. At the end of the day, they probably only achieved about a tenth of that, an eighth or a tenth of that. And also the public works were used to employ unemployed people, often at very poor wages, in poor working conditions. But it was, again, a way of controlling threats of industrial unrest by at least giving people a job.
And did Mussolini have an effective, if you like, state police, or did he have an equivalent of a Gestapo who would put terror and coercion? Or was it as horrendously effective as its German counterparts?
I think that the police, I mean, fascist Italy really was a police state. Mussolini ran it very, very effectively. I mean, he met every day in the morning his chief of police. He was absolutely obsessed with who might be plotting against him, as well as signs of wider social unrest. So his police state was very effective. It was well run, but it was the state. It wasn't the fascist party. Mussolini was always a bit concerned of the fascist party as providing potential rivals to him. And indeed, a lot of the police activity was directed not against socialists or others like that, but was directed against other fascists. I mean, he monitored, he did listening in to people's calls, etc., and so on and so forth.
And how was his relationship then with you know, the other great institution of Italy, the Catholic Church? Because Did he? Because obviously, again, looking at Germany, there was a way to try and change Hitler's relationship with the German bishops is an interesting one. That's a book in itself. Yeah. But his relationship with the Catholic Church, because Italy may be a fascist state, but absolutely is the second pillar, if you like, of life in Italy.
Absolutely. And Mussolini in his younger days had been absolutely against the Catholic Church, partly because of his experience in a Catholic seminary school. But he recognized in about 1920 that the only way to secure power was to have some agreement, some working relationship, if you like, with the Catholic Church. And so from about 1922 to 1929, he began to explore how there could be a working relationship with the Catholic Church, which in 1929 saw the conclusion of what were called the Lateran Accords, which recognized the Vatican City as an independent state, paid compensation to the Catholic Church for the land they lost at the time of unification, and set up a way of having a relationship that was managed. And to some extent that worked well. The Pope Pius XI at the time was very keen that this happened. He wasn't unsympathetic to some aspects of fascism. But it began to come under strain because Mussolini, in one sense, wanted the relationship, but he wanted a very one-sided relationship. He wanted the church to endorse everything he did, to give him a kind of rubber stamp. And there were limits to which the church was willing to do that, particularly when he moved towards war at the end of the 1930s into the 1940s.
I was going to say, was his popularity cracking, say, towards 37, 38, 39? Because what happens to Italy? And people mistakenly refer to the Italian campaigns as a sideshow, but when you look at the amount of men on both sides and the devastation that it wrought on the Italian population and the horrors that the Italian population go, especially in 1943, it's needs a second looking at, to put it mildly, because of the warfare and the horrors that were visited. So what happens with Mussolini as well, you know, could say he gets his just desserts, but were the cracks beginning to show as Italy becomes an axis, you know, joins the Axis power, becomes and is dragged into this war?
The answer to that is probably not. Mussolini had a very effective way of promoting his image. And what that did was, amongst many, not all by any means, but by many Italians, created a great faith in his leadership, such that even when things were going wrong, people still believed Mussolini would find a solution. And the evidence that there is from police reports, people's diaries, and so on and so forth, is that he remained pretty popular until about 1942, despite the fact that by then Italy, the Italian country, was being bombed, particularly Rome. But he remained popular. He was able to create a very extensive and deep faith in himself. And so it wasn't till the end, almost the last year of his rule of the country, that people began to think, what's this? What's he about? What's he doing? And it turned, and people began to see him as a malevolent force, really.
There's several stories about Mussolini that I sort of raise a smile, but one of them is keeping the lamp on his office in Rome to make people think he's working through the night, when in fact he's off seeing various mistresses and whatever. And the other one is it true that he turned up, because again, Africa, what we now call, you know, Libya, which was an Italian possession, and he turns up on his white horse thinking that Rommel's going to steamroll through to Cairo, and he wants to be riding in at the head of the procession on his white horse, which is another
I mean, image was important. he spent a lot of time being photographed, undertaking sports in which he had no known interest. and that showed up his cynical side quite effectively.
Talking cynical sides, I mean, we are a situation now where, to all intents and purposes, there is a right-wing government in Italy. I mean, the timing of the book and the manipulation of the media, are you trying to draw any parallels, or is it just literally it's time that we had a serious look at Mussolini, in case people dismiss all things Italian as a sort of a sideshow to the main action?
I suppose the book coincided with his appointment of Prime Minister in October 22, although we're a bit behind with that. But yes, there is this issue that in government now, led by the Brothers of Italy party under Giorgio Meloni, she has a record, as some others do, of being connected to neo-fascism. And there is quite a sort of concern in some quarters that that's what we're going to see. And well-known Italian historian Paul Connors recently written a book saying there's a danger that there's a lot of myths about Mussolini, and if we're not aware of that, we'll end up with some form of fascism.
Mm.
I tend to think that Meloni and Salvini and others, even might include Berlusconi, are not fascists, although they'll say things about fascism that would suggest that. What they are ultra-nationalists, conservative ultra-nationalists, and in some senses similar to what you're getting with the Republican Party, say, in the United States. But that isn't to say that if an ultra-conservative government begins to clamp down on democracy, the next step isn't a move towards authoritarianism.
The looking at Mussolini again, I mean, first book in 20 years in the English language, and it's interesting how history will reappraise him.
Yeah, Mussolini actually, maybe I shouldn't say this for sales of the book, but Mussolini ceased to be of interest. People were more interested in other aspects of fascism. I mean, he almost became the seem as A, a bit irrelevant, and B, we know all we're going to know about him. He was a chancellor, he was an opportunist, he was a good actor, maybe lucky to get into power, but that's about it. And I suppose what I'm trying to tease out is I think there was a bit more to him, though. He had a kind of serious side, and he certainly had a serious impact on the country.
The book is called Duce, The Contradictions of Power, The Political Leadership of Benito Mussolini. It's by Peter J. Williamson, who's talking to you today. Peter, if people want to find you online, do you have a website? Do you have a social media presence?
Yes, I do. It's Mussolini Study on Twitter. Mussolini Study on Twitter.
The book is called Duce. It's by Peter J. Williamson. Peter, thank you so much for your time today.
Sure. Thank you, Charles.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation. You chose style. Bombas is styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.